This is Basketball Central on Sportsnet 650 with Marcus Fitzgerald.
What's up? How you doing, Basketball Central, on a Thursday night? Marcus Fitzgerald with you once again. It is a great time to be doing this show on Sportsnet 650, the home of the Vancouver Canucks. Yes, it is a great time on Sportsnet 650 with the Canucks and what they did last night and what they have in store for us tomorrow. But it's also a good time for the NBA and the game of basketball in this country. It is great to have you with us. You could be anywhere in the world, but you're here with me, and I appreciate that. Lots to get to, as always. The postseason is underway. It sounds really strange to bring that up on August the 20th, but here we are. Again, credit to the NBA for making this happen. Four straight weeks now of zero positive COVID-19 tests within the bubble. Again, we've talked about, you know, the NBA and the NHL finding a way to make this successful, finding a way to sustain it. It's been great the entire time since it got started. Hard to believe it's almost been a month since the NBA got back to actual game action. It has been great, and the first few days of the postseason have been pretty solid as well. So we'll get into all that. As always, if you want to double back, check out something from this show that you missed, you can head over to our website, sportsnet.ca/650, the Basketball Central tab. It is all there. Every show, every interview, every take, anything you missed, you can double back, check that out. You can also find me on Twitter at Marcus Fitzy. All right, we'll get started here. Postseason underway. A lot of things that I like, some things I don't like, and that's where this show is going to go. One of the things I do want to get to, because we are taping this show on a Thursday afternoon, we are in the middle of Milwaukee-Orlando Game 2, Lakers and Portland Game 2 still to come, so we won't be able to talk about that game in this show, although I'm sure that Game 1 from the other night will come up at some point. The Blazers just continuing to play playoff basketball, really, for 2 weeks. They've done it the entire time in the bubble, and they were certainly more playoff ready the other night against the Lakers on Tuesday. So that may come up a little bit. But where I want to start, I mean, we've tried to embrace the year of chaos in Disney World inside the bubble, and we might actually see it again as we're taping this. Game 2 of Milwaukee-Orlando. Orlando took that first game, an 8 seed beating the 1. We saw that in both conferences earlier this week. We haven't seen that since 2003. It's been 17 years since something like that occurred. You also had the Lakers falling in Game 1 on Tuesday. That's one of the things that stands out here, is that home court, we talked about it not mattering. It truly does not matter in some cases. I think you had a situation where both Milwaukee and the Lakers thought they could waltz in there and flip the switch, and they realized very quickly that that's not going to be the case. We don't have that home court playoff energy to help us do that anymore. That's why you have a team like Orlando that came into the bubble needing to play well, needing to win ball games. That's why you had Orlando come in and beat Milwaukee in Game 1. That's why Nikola Vucevic was ready to go with 35-14. That's why, I mean, we've come to expect this from Damian Lillard. And again, we're taping this before Game 2 of the Blazers and the Lakers, so who knows what happens by the time this airs. But we expected Damian Lillard to have a night on Tuesday against the Lakers. Why? Because they've been playing playoff basketball for 2 weeks. CJ McCollum as well, two elite shot creators. And I suppose we shouldn't have been surprised at all that both of the one seeds in each conference dropped an opening game. So that's certainly stuck out as one of the stories. But perhaps the biggest story, at least on this side of the border, depending on how many fans of that team are actually here in Vancouver, the Toronto Raptors. Toronto continues to do everything we've expected through the first two games of this playoff series. They've really done everything that we've expected to see during the entire time they've been in the bubble. They rolled through everybody. There was that final game they played in the bubble where they rested all their starters and beat Denver anyway. They had a guy named Paul Watson come into the game and play well. I had never heard of Paul Watson until 5 or 6 days ago when he stepped onto the floor for Toronto in that ball game. The player development system that the Raptors have developed, it's unmatched anywhere else in the NBA. When you break down that roster and you realize that their two best players are an undrafted free agent in Fred VanVleet and a 27th overall pick a handful of years ago in Pascal Siakam, those are two of their best guys, two of their culture carriers moving forward with Kyle Lowry's contract coming up in a couple of years here. Masai Ujiri, Bobby Webster, Nick Nurse, they deserve all the credit in the world. This Raptors team looks like world beaters. And yeah, Kawhi's not there anymore. Yeah, Danny Green's not there anymore. It hasn't mattered. They've looked like champs. They've played like defending champions. They want to run it back. They want to rub it in our faces. They want to prove that, yeah, we don't need Kawhi. We don't need this guy. And they certainly don't need it in the Eastern Conference, at least until they presumably get to Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Bucks. So with Fred VanVleet averaging 27 through the first two games against Brooklyn, he's the biggest free agent this summer by a mile. There's a stat where in games where Fred VanVleet starts over the last handful of years, the Raptors are something like 63-8. All Fred VanVleet does is contribute to winning for the Toronto Raptors, offensively, defensively, hustle plays. He's a little undersized, but that backcourt right now, VanVleet and Kyle Lowry, that's one of the best in the NBA, if not the best. You know what you're getting from those two guys every night. And we talk about Lowry's contract. We know it's up in a couple of years. Also in a couple of years, you've got the looming specter of Giannis Antetokounmpo's free agency. Giannis may decide to re-sign in Milwaukee, but when you look at potential suitors, where else would he go? Raptors Twitter likes to make those jokes, but there's some truth to that. They aren't just jokes. The Raptors have the infrastructure, and a big part of that infrastructure right now is Fred VanVleet. All you have to do is look at that first playoff game against Brooklyn. 30 and 11 assists. He hit 9 threes in that game. He's averaged 27 through the first two. He is now a go-to guy. For years, what was it? It was Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, and then Kawhi showed up last year. So, well, we go to Kawhi first, and then everybody else kind of fills in and gets their shots. They're part of the others. And then last offseason, we talked about Pascal Siakam making the leap, and we've certainly seen him do that in the regular season. Hasn't quite hit in the postseason yet. He was up and down in the bubble as well, to the point where Nick Nurse was a little exasperated that the media was constantly asking about Pascal Siakam and whether or not he was going to perform at the level we all expect him to, considering his giant extension kicks in next year. But who's a guy who shows up every night and gives you 20 points, 7 or 8 assists, hard-nosed defense, 2 or 3 steals, and a couple of hustle plays? It's Fred VanVleet. And when you look at the looming free agents this summer, Anthony Davis is on the list, sure, but he's not leaving Los Angeles. Fred VanVleet's name just pops right off the page. He's your top guy. So the Raptors, for another summer here, have some decisions to make. It should seem easy for the Raptors here because they've got Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka coming off the books. That's a combined $48 million. And dealing in NBA dollars, NBA salaries, NBA money, Fred VanVleet was making $9 million a year the last couple of years. That's a bargain now. He signed that deal a couple years back, and some people scoffed at it. They thought, wow, $9 million a year for this guy who gives you about 10 points a game? That's a bargain now. So if you got $48 million on the books and you want to lock down that backcourt, I think you have to give VanVleet at least 20 a year. You want to give him a deal where he feels secure, but you also want to give him a deal to let him know that, hey, what we've built here, you're a big part of, and you're going to be a big part of that over the next half decade, and you're going to be the guy to lure potential free agents to Toronto. I know Masai Ujiri is the big wild card here. Masai has not signed long-term with Toronto, and it's crazy that he hasn't yet, although he's got plenty of other things on his plate. He's got his decisions to make, his own decisions to make. So you can't really blame him for that. But it is still surprising that he doesn't have his long-term deal. But once you go down the list, Masai, Bobby Webster, Nick Nurse, Kyle Lowry's going to move on. After that, it's Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet. I think if you're Fred, you're going to have to weigh your options in the offseason. You're going to get offers from the Detroit Pistons, Dwayne Casey, of course, the head coach there. Dwayne knows all about Fred VanVleet. Was there the year that they signed him as an undrafted free agent coming out of Wichita State, in which he was a conference player of the year twice, had a great college career, great high school career. This is an example of a guy in VanVleet that just constantly improves. And he's also emblematic of the system that the Raptors have in place with their player development. Because what did I say 5 minutes ago? Their two best players right now, two of their best, are Siakam and VanVleet, guys that they developed from just about nothing. Undrafted free agent and a 27th overall pick that had only been playing basketball for a handful of years. And they have struck gold with these two. Now, it doesn't always work out. You can point out Bruno Caboclo. Masai, you know, Ujiri drafted him. And even at the time when they picked him, what was the joke? He was 2 years away from being 2 years away. The Brazilian Kevin Durant. I saw Bruno up close at Raptors training camp in Burnaby. He looked like an all-star. But for whatever reason, he just hasn't put that together. So I'm not saying the Raptors are batting 1,000, but when you look at that team and where they're at and how they're designed and how they're built, Fred VanVleet is going to be a pillar to all that. And the Raptors will have the money to give Fred VanVleet. They'll have some decisions to make in the front court as well. I don't think Gasol is going to be back. I don't think Serge Ibaka is going to be back. Given the state of the game and where it's going, I think you can find, you know, bigger guys on the cheap. Kelly Olynyk, by the way, is another name. He's a free agent this summer. They've got quite the thing going in Miami as well, quite the core with Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, who they'll eventually have to pay, Tyler Hero, Kendrick Nunn, Duncan Robinson. I don't know that Kelly Olynyk necessarily fits into the Miami plans, but if you've got a situation with the Raptors where they can sell Olynyk, a Canadian, on that situation to join VanVleet and Lowry and Siakam and OG Anunoby as well, who the Raptors are going to have to pay. I think it's fairly obvious that if you're Fred VanVleet, you have to be blown away financially, either by the Pistons or the Knicks. You know that Leon Rose is going to want to make a splash in the offseason. The Knicks also have some pieces to work with in RJ Barrett, Mitchell Robinson, Kevin Knox. They'll have some first-round picks that they've obtained through the Porzingis trade with Dallas. They also have their own first-round pick this year. They're likely to pick in the top 10, by the way, when we're recording this. We are recording it before the NBA draft lottery, so we'll also know that next week as well. So you'll add that to the core of the New York Knicks, and maybe that would be a suitor that Fred VanVleet would consider. But, I mean, what an ascension for this guy, where you take an undrafted free agent, and now he is a key piece on a championship contender. And you've reached a scenario where, okay, VanVleet has given you everything that he can give you. Do you make sure that you repay that? Masai obviously couldn't sell Kawhi Leonard on the culture in Toronto, but we know he can sell Fred VanVleet on that same culture. He can sit down with Fred and say, look, we believed in you from the beginning. You were an undrafted free agent out of Wichita State. We have supported you. We're behind you. We're with you. We think you can be the guy here or one of the guys here for the next half decade, 5-7 years. That Raptor core, what's it going to be, right? It's going to be Fred VanVleet. It's going to be Pascal Siakam. Kyle Lowry's not hanging around too much longer here. He's got a year left after this season. And then after that, he's 34 years old, and he'll have things to consider. Once you hit 34, smaller guard, now you start to find the downside of your career. We all know that. So you know that Fred VanVleet will eventually be the lead guard for this ball club. Looked at to score 20 points a night, hit some big threes, play some defense. Is he on the level defensively of Kyle Lowry? Perhaps not quite, but he's getting there. And he can certainly get there given the ceiling that he has developed for himself, given the ceiling that Pascal Siakam has developed, and given the fact that the Raptors develop players perhaps like no other organization in the NBA. Terrence Davis is another one of those guys who just comes out of nowhere and can play. Matt Thomas can give you a little bit offensively as well. That's the reason the Raptors are where they are. they constantly have 10, 11 guys who can play. Some of these championship contenders in the NBA, look at the Lakers. They lost to the Blazers the other night. LeBron had a decent night. What was it, 23, 15, and 17? Something like that. But they're top-heavy. It's LeBron, it's Anthony Davis, and oh, well, you know, maybe Kyle Kuzma can score 15 points. Oh, you know, maybe Alex Caruso can give us 17 if he has a really good night. What makes the Raptors so good is they've got a ton of guys who can do that, and you know they can do that. Norm Powell is fantastic in Game 2. People sold Norm Powell stock for like 2 years. I never understood it. He's given the Raptors 17 a game in the regular season. His development, really. That's another guy right there. And granted, they had already paid Norm Powell to this point. He's one of the few that's actually locked in for a few years in Toronto. Their cap situation with the Raptors does look pretty good. And if Masai and Bobby Webster decide to stick around, they've got an incredible foundation with which to build. Norm Powell's another one of those guys, though. Chris Boucher, where'd that guy come from? Saw him play for Team Canada against China at Rogers Arena a couple years ago, and he was all over the court. And as soon as I heard, oh, he's going to be a Raptor. Oh, he'll be fine. He's going to play. He's going to be a good player because he's a Raptor. That's all they do over there is develop guys. So if you're Fred VanVleet, I think the situation is clear. You have to stay in Toronto. Wouldn't you rather be the man in Toronto with that system in place, provided that Nick Nurse stays around, provided you know that Pascal Siakam is going to be there, instead of going to Detroit or New York? When's the last time the Pistons were successful? When's the last time they had any success? Would that be enough for Fred VanVleet to convince him, okay, I can go be the man, but I can also help turn an organization around? Does Fred VanVleet think that way? I'm not sure that he does. If Leon Rose comes up to Fred VanVleet and offers him close to $100 million to help turn around the New York Knicks, is VanVleet going to look at that and go, well, that's something I need to consider? I think that's the only way you convince him out of Toronto, is if you blow him away financially. Fred VanVleet does not strike me as a guy that needs that extra adulation, that extra attention. You don't need to massage an ego of Fred VanVleet, given his background, given where he came from, and given what he gives you and how hard he plays every night on the court. He's not like some of these other guys where you have to cater to them, you have to sign players around them to help them be successful, you have to dictate an offensive system around certain guys. You don't have to do that with a Fred VanVleet. You know he's just going to show up, he's going to give you 18 to 20 points, 5 or 6 assists, couple of steals, hard-nosed defense, and he will hit some big shots in big games. And he's got championship pedigree. That counts for a lot, too. He is the biggest free agent this summer. The Raptors would be foolish to let him go, and given that they are not held down by any sort of cap constraints, it would be crazy to not give Fred VanVleet everything that he is worth. $48 million coming off the books this summer with Gasol and Ibaka. Gasol and Ibaka, championship contributors, good big men. Mark Gasol can still play. Ibaka can still play a little bit too, but eventually you got to make decisions on these guys. When you look at those three guys, it's very easy. Okay, Marc Gasol, Serge Ibaka, Fred VanVleet, who do we take care of first? It's obvious. It has to be Fred. They have to give him what he's worth, because the only way he leaves is if he's blown over financially. If the Knicks or the Pistons just blow Toronto's offer out of the water, and that may not even happen. I think if you're Fred VanVleet, your mind is already made up. I think you stay in Toronto, you continue to be successful, but we've seen crazier things. And I think big things are ahead for this Raptor team. I think that the second round against Boston will tell the tale if they are truly a finals contender, because they will dismiss the Brooklyn Nets very quickly here. Like, Brooklyn gave them a run in Game 2, but it's one of those situations where you know that that was Brooklyn's best shot, given the guys that they have, given how banged up they are. No Kevin Durant, no Kyrie Irving, no DeAndre Jordan. There's Jared Allen, TLC, I can't even pronounce his name, Caris LeVert, and a bunch of guys that you may not have ever heard of. There's a bunch of guys on that roster who really haven't played together all that long. And give Jacques Vaughn credit, because he got that team into the playoffs once they got to the bubble. But the Raptors should have no trouble with Brooklyn over the course of these next two games here. I'd be surprised if the Nets took a game off the Raptors. But there should be no trouble for Toronto here. The real test will be when they get to Boston And I say that they'll get to Boston because the Philadelphia 76ers look about done. They look about finished. We're going to talk about the Sixers in the next segment. But if the Raptors and the Celtics get together in the second round, and it appears to be headed that way, you wonder what that's going to look like, and you wonder if that's going to be the series where Pascal Siakam really sort of puts the hammer down as the lead guy. I mean, Van Vliet has been great. Lowry has been just consistently consistent, which is what you want out of him at this stage in his career, even though he is a perennial all-star and a great defender. You're getting everything you want out of everybody on that roster, and that's a testament to the coaching staff because those guys are long and tough, smart. They're always locked in. That's all Nick Nurse. That is all Nick Nurse. But can they do it against Boston? Can they take down the Celtics in a seven-game series? They've had their troubles with the Celtics this year because the Celtics can go small. I know that Gordon Hayward is out for a few weeks here, and then Hayward will eventually leave the bubble because his wife is due for, I believe, their fourth daughter. So Hayward is going to be in and out of that lineup. We might see him in the second round. We may not. Ankle injuries are always tough. But that second round is really going to tell the story for the Raptors and how ready they're going to be potentially for Milwaukee. I mean, I've said for months now that the Raptors should get to the Eastern Conference Finals. But it's probably not going to be easy. Based on what the Celtics have done to the Sixers in the first two games here, Jason Tatum is on another level. Tatum has had one bad game in the bubbles. The first game he got there, he shot 1-for-18, and everybody on Twitter had a field day. He's been great since then. Tatum can do absolutely everything you want on the floor at both ends. Jason Tatum eventually will become one of the best two-way players in the game, and Jaylen Brown is not that far behind. I mean, we watched The Last Dance, right? You watch The Last Dance, and you remember what Scottie Pippen brought to the table? I see a lot of Scottie Pippen and Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown was a third overall pick in a year where it seemed like it was a two-player draft. Brandon Ingram went second. Ben Simmons went first to the Sixers. And then at three, the Celtics took Jaylen Brown. And we thought, well, okay, maybe he's ready coming out of Cal. Maybe he's not. But that guy has really blossomed. I mean, you talk about young guys developing. And we've spent the first segment here talking about Fred VanVleet and how important he is to the Raptors' success and how important he is to the future of the Raptors' success and what they need to do to make sure he gets re-signed. Jaylen Brown is just that for Danny Ainge and the Boston Celtics. And Danny Ainge gets a bad rap sometimes because he's constantly hoarding assets and he's always looking to trade him for some big star, and he never actually gets the job done. There's always some big star that Danny Ainge is after that he wants to unload all his assets for, and never quite pulls it off. Anthony Davis was the latest, the most recent. Instead, New Orleans took the Los Angeles package, headlined by Brandon Ingram and Lonzo Ball and Josh Hart. But if you're Danny Ainge, you're laughing right now. You've got two of the best two-way, young two-way players in the sport. You are well on your way to round two, and you've got a matchup looming with the defending champion Raptors. Will Toronto be good enough to face the Celtics? Only time will tell as we move down the road. Back with more. You've got it on Basketball Central. I am Marcus Fitzgerald. You're on the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Basketball Central continues on Sportsnet 650 with your host, Marcus Fitzgerald.
Best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
Welcome back, Basketball Central, on a Thursday night. Marcus Fitzgerald with you on Sportsnet 650, the home of the Canucks. And don't forget, Game 6 tomorrow night, Canucks and Blues, Vancouver with a chance to advance up 3-2 in that series. What a game that was last night. Tyler Motte, what a performance. Jake Virtanen, playoff Jake, has arrived. Pretty good game last night. Should be a great game tomorrow night as well. Andrew Walker, Satchaw, Jovo, Yannick Hansen, the boys They'll have you covered tomorrow night. Pregame show will start at about 4:30 or so. And then puck drop to fall. A little earlier start, though, by the way, 6:45, not 7:45. So just know that. Sportsnet 650 will have you covered as the Canucks will look forward to potentially moving on to round two and eliminating the defending Stanley Cup champions after a pretty stirring performance in the second period last night to erase that three-goal deficit. Anyway, that's my hockey analysis for now. This is Basketball Central on Sportsnet 650. I'm Marcus Fitzgerald. You can find me on Twitter at Marcus Fitzy. And by the way, you can find this show on our website, sportsnet.ca/650, the Basketball Central page. Anything you missed over the last little while, you can go back and check it out. Talking that first segment about Fred VanVleet and the Toronto Raptors, how good he has been. Talk about inspired contract year runs, and certainly VanVleet has done that. He was a massive contributor in the championship year a year ago, so you can't totally, you know, equate it to that. But the Raptors are in a situation, and Fred VanVleet has put them in a situation where the Raptors pretty much have to pay Fred VanVleet at this point. You've got close to $50 million coming off the books this summer with the expiring deals of Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol, and those are going to be some difficult decisions that Bobby Webster and Masai Ujiri will have to make. But anybody can see that with those two contracts, well, that's Fred VanVleet's money right there. You're not going to give him $40 million, but you're going to give him close to a little more than half that. I would not be surprised at all if the Raptors made an offer to VanVleet where he's pulling close to $21, $22 million a year next season. The guy's been a bargain at $9 million per the last couple of years. And again, people scoffed at that deal when he signed it, but this is a testament to the Raptors' player development program. And now they have a chance to give one of their own the bag. And they should. There's no reason that they shouldn't if the Raptors are going to continue to be a forward-thinking organization with Kyle Lowry, 34, in a couple of years. Gasol and Ibaka probably moving on after this year, given their age. You've got a young core in place now after this season. And in the next couple of years anyway, when Kyle Lowry potentially moves on, where it's Fred VanVleet, Pascal Siakam, OG Anunoby, Terrence Davis, and Lord knows who else, Bobby Webster, Masai Ujiri, and Nick Nurse unearth in their development program, which has been lauded as one of the best in the NBA, and it probably is the best in the NBA. Talk about Chris Boucher. Talk about Paul Watson, a guy I never heard of until last week, came in and played pretty well against the Denver Nuggets. This is a team that went 7-1 in the bubble and basically sat their starters and still found a way to win ball games. This is a special thing the Raptors have going right now, and they would be foolish to even allow Fred VanVleet to consider leaving. The only way I think he would do it is if some team like the Pistons or the Knicks, desperate to infuse some type of championship mentality into their rosters, just blow the doors off of any offer that the Raptors make Fred VanVleet to the point where VanVleet would really have to consider it. If the Raptors make an offer to VanVleet where it's like $80 million over 4 years and the Knicks come in with $110 million over five, you'd be pretty crazy to not at least think about it. Even though playing for James Dolan, playing for the Knicks is its own occupational hazard at this point, and it has been for the last 20 years, you'd be crazy enough to not at least consider it if you're Fred VanVleet. And what an incredible run it's been for him. An undrafted free agent in 2016, and now he's looking at this nine-figure payday, either from the Raptors or for somebody else. It's proof that when you bet on yourself, there's no telling what you can do. Fred VanVleet is a prime example of that. He is in line for a big deal from the Raptors or someone else a little later this summer. And we talk about cores and what that's going to look like in 2021. Raptors Twitter likes to make the jokes about Giannis Antetokounmpo coming to Toronto, particularly after Orlando won Game 1 the other day. We're taping this as Game 2 between the Magic and the Bucks are in progress, and it looks like Milwaukee is in much better shape here than they were a couple of days ago. The Bucks have found their footing. As we're taping this, they're up by 21 at the half. Giannis already has 12 points and 13 boards as we tape this just after 4 p.m. on a Tuesday afternoon. But when you look at cores and the options that Giannis is going to be considering in 2021, should he re-sign in Milwaukee? That's why this year for the Bucks, it's really championship or bust. If you get eliminated early in the bubble and you're walking into a scenario where you're not even sure if there's going to be a next season, You're not even sure if there's going to be a season at all. If they don't find a vaccine, is there any guarantee at all there's going to be a next season? That's why I've said to everybody, just enjoy all this now. Enjoy these sports now. Enjoy the NBA now. Enjoy the NHL now. Enjoy the NFL for as long as it's going to last. The NFL is in a totally different thing. They seem to think they want to have some fans and maybe put their postseason in a bubble. Except by the time they get there, COVID's going to be rampant all over the NFL, just like it is in Major League Baseball. So enjoy this now. And I think for the Milwaukee Bucks, my point is here is that they're in enjoy this now mode. Enjoy this now mode and win now mode. That's where they're at with the Bucks. That's where we're at with that organization. So there's a lot for Giannis to consider here. He could re-sign with the Bucks in 2021, but what does that Milwaukee core look like? What does it look like? Maybe Coach Budenholzer's still there. Maybe Coach Bud is still there. Maybe he's not. Maybe after two or three years of disappointments and failing to make adjustments, saw that with Giannis last year against Kawhi Leonard. The Raptors were a little too rangy, a little too defensive-minded for Giannis. Wasn't able to play make the way that he would have wanted to. Milwaukee didn't really adjust. Milwaukee lost the first game against Orlando. Didn't make a lot of second-half adjustments, certainly. They look better here this afternoon as we're taping this, and you knew that they would. But maybe Mike Budenholzer's there in a couple of years. Chris Middleton, we know, is going to be there in a few years still. Eric Bledsoe is under contract going into the summer of 2021, but that's about it. That's the core for Milwaukee. And it's also Milwaukee. It's Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I know these guys can sell their shoes and make their dollars no matter where they are now. Playing in a small market doesn't matter anymore. Oklahoma City is a prime example of that. Hell, Portland is a prime example of that. Everybody loves Damian Lillard. Is Portland this enormous market that translates to massive commercial success? No. If you're good, people will find you. The market doesn't matter. What matters is the core and the system and the infrastructure in place, and I don't know that that's going to be there in Milwaukee in a couple years. It's certainly not very clear. There's still plenty of time, and the Bucks have to figure some things out. If they don't win a championship this season, they're going to have to make some very difficult decisions, some difficult changes, I would imagine, to appeal to Giannis. But that's what you're looking at. You're not looking at cities anymore. They help, but you have to look at the core that's in place. And I wonder if the two cores that are most appealing to Giannis Antetokounmpo are outside of Milwaukee. And again, Raptors Twitter makes their jokes, but what's a better core for Giannis if he leaves the Bucks? If Giannis was to go to Toronto in 2021, who's he going to be lining up with then? There's clarity there. There's young clarity there. Fred VanVleet would be there, you would imagine, assuming the Raptors re-sign him, and they should. Pascal Siakam would be there, making a max deal. OG Anunoby, who they will have to decide to pay very soon here. Terrence Davis, Chris Boucher, Nick Nurse. Maybe Masai Ujiri decides to sign long-term in Toronto after all. Maybe he's still there. Maybe Masai is there to help sell Giannis on Toronto, to help sell Giannis on the culture that they built. Championship pedigree culture, which certainly helps. I know it didn't work for Kawhi. Kawhi wanted to go home. That's his decision. You could argue right now that if Kawhi was in the Raptors right now, I mean, the Raptors already look tough. If Kawhi was a Raptor this season, they'd be world beaters. I don't know that you would beat them. I think Kawhi would be in a better situation basketball-wise in Toronto right now than with the Clippers. Because with the Clippers, nobody's ever healthy. And Paul George, you know, look, Paul George won, what, 3-for-14 last night in Game 2? That's the real playoff P. Paul George isn't a playoff performer. I know he's gone on Instagram and he's chirped at Damian Lillard saying, oh, well, I made a couple of conference finals once. Yeah, but you know what? If you're taking somebody in a do-or-die game, you're taking Dame Lillard over Paul George every damn day. You are. And even Paul George knows that. Paul George would probably tell you that. Is Paul George the ideal running mate for Kawhi Leonard? I don't know. But I think Siakam is. I think Fred VanVleet is. I think Serge Ibaka is. I think Marc Gasol is. Kawhi decided to leave that setup in Toronto. And he wanted to go home, and that's fine. But basketball situation? It's hard to say that the Clippers situation is better than what's going on in Toronto right now. So my point is, it would be easy for Masai Ujiri to sell that to Giannis. And you would have a core of solid players already in place. You know Fred VanVleet's going to get better, provided they re-sign him. You know Siakam's going to get better. OG Anunoby, Terrence Davis, Chris Boucher. couple of low first-round draft pick player X that I'm sure will also pan out because it's Toronto. That's how this works. Nick Nurse is there. Bobby Webster is there, you would think. Maybe Masai's still there. I think that'd be an easy call for Giannis if he believes that the Milwaukee Bucks aren't positioned to win a championship for the following half decade after the summer of 2020. I think that'd be an easy call. But is it the best? Would it be the best basketball situation for Giannis? Jokes aside, Raptors Twitter aside, would that be the best bet? It'd be a great fit. Would it be the best bet? I think there's another core in the Eastern Conference that Giannis would consider. Frankly, I think it's a three-horse race. It's Milwaukee, it's Toronto, and it's the Miami Heat. There is a team, since the playoffs have gotten going here in the last few days, that has really impressed me. They impressed me during the restart, and they've impressed me the first couple of games of the postseason here. They're up 2-0 in their series with Indiana as of this afternoon. Jimmy Butler, when it matters, when it counts. I know that statistically he's not the best three-point shooter. In fact, he's one of the worst. He's a classic quasi-hero ball guy. He's a little old school. He's a little throwback, Jimmy Butler is. But he has quickly become one of my favorite players. That attitude, that mindset, that old school, you're either with me or you're not. And if you're not, then I'm pulling you with me. That's Jimmy Butler right now. He's been very impressive. He was particularly impressive in that Game 1 victory over Indiana. And he had a decent day here in Game 2. Duncan Robinson was more the story. He went 7-for-8 from 3, and that's a large reason why Miami won Game 2. But Jimmy Butler's at the forefront of all this. So if you're Giannis, again, play the same game. Bring up the same scenario I just did with the Raptors. The Raptors' core, Van Vliet, Siakam, OG, Terrence Davis, Chris Boucher, Nick Nurse, Masai Ujiri, assuming they're both there. But then you look at Miami. You're Giannis Antetokounmpo. You're in Milwaukee. It snows. It's cold. Hey, let's go to Miami. Hey, there's Jimmy Butler. Hey, there's Bam Adebayo, a perennial all-star. Hey, there's Tyler Hero, who's only going to get better. Hey, there's Duncan Robinson. I'm surrounded by shooters. Look at this. Isn't that something? Hey, Eric Spoelstra's still here. He coached LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh. He's got 2 championships. Oh, and hey, look. Pat Riley's still the president. And Pat Riley is Pat Riley. And Pat Riley will continue to bring out his little velvet bag of championship rings every time he tries to recruit a free agent. That's the other core. That's the other option for Giannis. It is a three-horse race. I know that Laker Twitter will try to convince you that Giannis is going there. I know you're going to hear that. He's not going to the Western Conference. He won't do that. He'll either stay in Milwaukee, which he will likely do, but if it came down to somewhere else, 2 cities, 2 franchises, 2 cores already in place with a clear plan, Toronto and Miami, that's it. And if you're Giannis, you'd want to play in Miami. You'd want to play in Toronto, but you'd want to play in Miami too, because you would love to have a second guy like Jimmy Butler. We've seen what Jimmy Butler can do when he is the de facto second guy. If it wasn't for a Kawhi Leonard 4-bounce fallaway baseline jump shot, the Sixers would have been in the conference final, and it would have been because of Jimmy Butler. Look at the Sixers now. Do you think they could use Jimmy Butler? Do you think they could use him? I sure think so. I sure think so. You'd want to ride with Jimmy Butler. You'd want to be in Jimmy Butler's foxhole, even if that means getting up at 3:30 in the morning to get shots up in the gym, because that's what he does. He's an old-school guy with an old-school approach. I think you'd want to ride with a guy like that. And I think Jimmy would be at a point in his career, this would be a couple years down the road when Butler's 32, 33 years old, where he knows, hey, I don't have to be the guy now. I can still be me, but I don't have to be the guy. This would also put Jimmy Butler in a good spot. And you surround them with a rising star who's an all-star this year, and Bam Adebayo can guard all 5 positions. Really can give Giannis a little bit of trouble. Although Giannis, I think, took it personally when Milwaukee played Miami here in the bubble. And Giannis basically kicked Bam Adebayo's ass all up and down the court. And then we kind of stopped on the whole Bam Adebayo can guard Giannis. Now, Giannis knows, hey, I don't have to see this guy in the Eastern Conference anymore. I can team up with him. Now, that frees me up on defense. Giannis may very well win Defensive Player of the Year this year, and he will be a perennial contender for that award for the next 5 years. But if he gets to line up with a player like Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, now he just gets to roam and play free safety. That is a terrifying defensive group, provided that Jimmy Butler doesn't lose a step. That's a terrifying group. And then you surround them with shooters. Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson. It's a good core. Eric Spoelstra, championship coach, and Pat Riley is still Pat Riley. So if you're Giannis, you've got some decisions to make, but it's a lot more clear than you may think. It's two teams outside of Milwaukee. It's Toronto and it's Miami. There is no other option. There is no other option. Now, that brings us to talking about Jimmy Butler, who has been so impressive to start the postseason, and this Miami Heat team that I'm such a fan of. They're going to get Milwaukee here in round two, and they're going to give Milwaukee everything the Bucks can handle. It might go six games, maybe seven, but it's going to be six or seven hard games. It's not going to be a waltz. The Heat, with their culture, what they've established defensively, that's what they do. They make you work. They don't have to get caught up in a game of math where the other team shoots 43s and, oh, we have to shoot 43s too. No, they just defend you. They defend you. They break you down. They've got veteran guys, dogs on the perimeter. I've talked about this with the Heat for the last few weeks, and we're seeing it now in the postseason. Andre Iguodala can still give you something. So can Jay Crowder. Kelly Olynyk, who's a free agent this year, he can give you stuff. They all can. They talk about it. Heat culture, and they have it. They have it. They're going to be good for the next couple of years, and that's something that Giannis Antetokounmpo should consider. That's something he should consider. But that takes us to the Sixers. And I feel like there's a lot of wasted ink on the Philadelphia 76ers, and we've talked about this Philly team and what they're supposed to be. There's all this energy that's expended talking about what the Philadelphia 76ers should be. They sign and trade Jimmy Butler to Miami. Okay, maybe not the best decision, but you get Josh Richardson back, who can shoot, who has some length on the perimeter, who's able to defend. You sign Al Horford, one of the only guys in the NBA who can effectively check Joel Embiid. And when that happened, everybody got excited. Everybody got excited because you looked at that Philadelphia lineup and you knew that Ben Simmons was already an elite defender. And talk about perennial DPOY candidates, Ben Simmons is going to be one of those guys for the next half decade. We looked at the Sixers in the offseason coming into this year and thought, okay, this roster is going to be mammoth. These guys are huge. They're long. They're rangy. There's no reason to believe they can't get to the Eastern Conference Finals. And maybe there's a chance that they could get to the finals. They could represent the East in the finals in October. Granted, we didn't say October back then. We said June, but you know where I'm going with this. We put championship aspirations on the Sixers for probably the last 3 years now, waiting for them to figure it out, waiting for them to come through. But it comes down to two things. It comes down to asset allocation and health. And the Sixers have had just awful luck with that. They've made some bad decisions. They've gotten some bad luck. It's awful luck that Ben Simmons got hurt once the restart got underway. Had to have knee surgery, done for the rest of the year. That's your best perimeter defender. That's one of the best defenders in the NBA. I know that Ben Simmons can't shoot. I know that he can't shoot. We've heard the jokes. Hell, that's gotten plenty of run on this show. Provides me with plenty of material. Ben Simmons can't shoot. Yeah, but you know what? He can do absolutely everything else on the floor that you'd want. That's a guy that makes things happen for you on the perimeter. That's a guy who can run your offense. And now Brett Brown and the Sixers are in a situation where you have to go through Joel Embiid, which would have been fine if this was 2006, but it's not. It's 2020. Embiid doesn't get the ball inside enough. Instead, it's, oh, hey, it's Joel at the three-point line, and here comes the big awkward pump fake that everybody knows is coming, and then he barrels into the paint, and then he goes up against two or three defenders and hopes to draw a foul. And the reason they do that is because Brett Brown hasn't figured that out. He hasn't quite figured it out, how to operate Embiid with the rest of these guys. Why don't you go four out and have Embiid work the paint, work the middle, run some high screen and roll? Joel Embiid should, in theory, be one of the best pick-and-roll finishers in the game behind Anthony Davis. He should be right there. He should be dominant. He should be a guy where every night it's 25 and 12 and four blocks, and he makes a handful of plays that you don't see on the score sheet that change the game. He should be that guy. Instead, it's not translating. It's not translating. Why? Because it's a perimeter-oriented game. You don't have Ben Simmons to initiate the offense. You lost Jimmy Butler over the summer, the sign-and-trade. Josh Richardson is not Jimmy Butler. You lost J.J. Redick, one of your shooters. So it's no surprise that the Sixers are disappointing, and yet they suck us in every year. They fooled me. Hell, the start of the restart, I thought, you know what? I'm embracing the all-chaos finals. It's going to be Rockets-Sixers in October. They sucked me right in. That's what the Sixers have done for 3 years. Their length and their athleticism, and for whatever reason, they just can't figure it out. And I feel like we're in a situation with Brett Brown in Philadelphia where it's kind of like Dwayne Casey in Toronto. We've given you the talent. Yeah, you've had some bad luck with injuries, but eventually you have to figure it out. Eventually you have to get over the hump, and the Sixers are going backwards. Seems like every move the Sixers make, they always have to take 2 steps back. That's kind of where we're at now with Al Horford. The Al Horford contract is erroneous. Erroneous. You'll be giving a 34-year-old center who can't play at the same time as Embiid $54 million over the next 2 years. And you're also locked into Tobias Harris, who's a nice player, a nice offensive player, but he's not worth nearly $140 million over the next 4 years after this one. Al Horford makes nearly as much as Embiid does over the next 3 years. You can't even play them together. You can't even play them together. Ben Simmons' extension kicks in next season. They'll be paying him close to $30 million a year for the next half decade. You could have absolutely given Jimmy Butler Tobias Harris's money. I mean, Butler and Embiid were buddies. It's not like Jimmy wore out his welcome. It's not like he wasn't well-liked in the Philadelphia room. It wasn't like the Minnesota situation where he bullied his way out of there. That wasn't the case. Jimmy may have wanted his own team, and he may have read the tea leaves and said, well, with Ben Simmons here and Joel Embiid here, it's obviously not going to be my team. So you have to factor that in as well. But if you're Elton Brand, you were able to get that done. Imagine that none of that happened. Imagine if Jimmy Butler stayed in Philadelphia. They didn't sign Al Horford. Why wouldn't Miami be the why wouldn't Philadelphia be the favorite in the East? Why wouldn't they be? They were 4 bounces away from a conference final trip last year, and it was Jimmy Butler who helped get them there. Jimmy Butler. Not Embiid. Not Ben Simmons. Jimmy Butler. He was the most important piece. And now Jimmy's in a situation where he's got his own team in Miami, and they look dangerous as hell. Dangerous as hell. They will probably lose to Milwaukee in round two, but it's going to be a dogfight. It's going to be a dogfight. It'll go 6, maybe even 7 with the way that they play. But if you're Elton Brand, you're the Philadelphia 76ers, you got a lot of things to figure out. You got a lot of answers you're looking for. Brett Brown will likely not be back. There always has to be a scapegoat, just like Dwayne Casey was in Toronto. Can the Sixers find somebody to, you know, bring the best out of the talent that they've compiled? Because they're not getting out of the Al Horford contract. They're not. J.J. Redick's not walking through that door. Jimmy Butler's not walking through that door. This is their roster. They are set. Can you help Tobias Harris reach another level, even though you're paying him $140 million over the next 4 years? I don't know if you can. I don't think Brett Brown's the guy. All right. That was a pretty good show. I got to go. I'm Marcus Fitzgerald. You can find me on Twitter, at Marcus Fitzy. And hey, don't forget, Canucks and Blues. Tomorrow night, 6:45 puck drop on Sportsnet 650. Canucks looking to move on. We are the home of the Canucks. And also, once a week, the NBA. This is Basketball Central. I'm Marcus Fitzgerald. Have a great week. We'll do it again in a week's time. Take care.